Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord, I beat the case. That man be calling out.
It is Thursday, March 10th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host, Chris Drew. Before we get anywhere, before we get started, before we talk about anything, if you haven't done it yet, come play March Madness with us. Everyone loves a fucking bracket. Everyone loves filling out brackets. Shit, my daughter's going to fill one out. My girlfriend will fill one out, I'm sure. I mean, it's the most fun time of the year because you don't even have to like basketball. You don't even have to watch basketball all year long. You can just tune in starting next Thursday and watch the insanity ensue, right? Yeah. Sister Mary Jean or whoever the hell is going to be the celebrity of this March Madness and the Cinderella story. So if you want to play the Bracketology, Menace Madness, Venmo $20 to Cameron Media. Winner takes 80%. Second place takes 20%. Third place gets money back. And we are going to have to cut a little bit off for charity just to make it legal. But we will keep it a minimal amount. I'm thinking 10%, maybe 10 to 25%. I haven't. It just depends on how big it gets. I mainly want you guys to win a big pot. So Venmo $20. Make sure you put your email in the comment of the Venmo, and we will add you to the bracket list.
Yep.
We already have 30. I think 30 submissions already, and it's we got plenty of time. It's going to be big. I would imagine we have over 100, maybe 200 submissions. So it's going to be a massive pot. I hope at least. So if you haven't yet, sign up. $20 to Camera Media. Also going on, we're doing our March Madness squares where you get a square and that plays throughout the entire tournament and pays out every single game. First round games, there's 32 of them. You could win $25 if your score hits in the first round, $50 in the second round, $100 in the Sweet 16, I think $200 in the Elite Eight, $400 in the Final Four. And then if your score hits the final score, you win $1,000, the final score of the national championship. So come, that's $100 a square. You could Venmo, the same Venmo, Cameron Media, $100, and get your square and play along with us. And then we got a big, I got my beta test tonight. So as long as that goes well, zone6.com will launch tomorrow. Really excited about it. But again, tonight we have our test run through the site to make sure it's all cooking. And, you cross your fingers because you never know what's going to happen with technology. But if that happens, we will be rolling.
Yep.
But that was there's my intro, Chris. I had to get that out of the way. I had an eventful night last night on Twitter, as always. It's always fun.
I was asleep. You know, I go to bed early, so I missed all the shenanigans, man. But you doing all right? You're here today. You got, everything's
I'm
cool.
Doing all right. I was doing all right last night. I was doing all right this morning. I mean, I'm always all right. I'm cooler than the other side of the pillow. Some other people just are not. They hotter heads sometimes prevail in other households. Just wild times. I mean, messaging my girlfriend that she has no legal right to post pictures of my kids, like just wild shit. Like what the fuck? I mean, it's bipolar disorder is what it is. I mean, you ebbs and flows. One day it's great. Next day is like fucking the world's on fire. So just crazy.
It's still a good day. We were having a great day yesterday, Zach.
It was National Women's Day or whatever.
No, that was a couple of days ago, but
every day is National Women's Day, Chris. Don't be sexist.
Sorry. Whoa. I love women. I digress. back at it at the show. So first of all, spring football, that viral picture of Marvin Harrison Jr. is kind of, making its way around Ohio State, social media, like a Twitter. He looks massive, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, it's what happens, right? That year one to year two transformation, you get a full offseason with Mickey Marotti. And I've talked about it with Travion Henderson, and obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be another one of those. Emeka Egbuka, like that whole class of guys are going to look like different human beings after having a full offseason. And think about it. I mean, it's only March. Like they still have, obviously spring ball is going to be football centric. Then after that, they have a whole nother training session, right? We break it down into four quarters. The first quarter is winter conditioning, strength and conditioning. That's the first quarter. They've only been through the first quarter of this developmental cycle. Now they go through spring ball, the second quarter. Then the summer is the third quarter. And then obviously season and training camp, that's the fourth quarter. So they're going to look like different human beings. And they already do in what? Literally 2 months. It's been 2 months since the season ended. In 2 months, they look like completely different humans. And I did think it was funny, though, like in that picture, and maybe it's just because I know him, but Cameron Babb looked like a monster.
He looked like a
linebacker. Like,
yeah.
I know people freaked out about Marvin Harrison Jr. maybe because he was so skinny and now he's not so skinny, but Cam Babb looked like he had 30-inch arms. He looked like a monster. So
he looked like the more impressive of the two in that. But I wanted to ask you, do you worry about receivers getting maybe too big? Is that a thing? Or is it bigger the better?
Depends on the receiver. It's all about can you move? Right. Mm-hmm. You put on weight, you put on size, you add strength. And then at some point you have to identify like, all right, he's hit his ceiling. Like we don't want to put more weight on him because his speed and agility and how he moves will be hindered by that size. So you just have to evaluate it and see like, how's the guy move? How's it go? Like, how's it going? Is ultimately the question, and get as big as you can. If you've ever seen David Boston, he was 260 pounds steroided up, but he could still move. Right. So that's the question. Like, can they still move the way you want them to? And if they can, the stronger, the better. Right.
Mm-hmm. Like he looked like that's one of the crazier transformations I think I've seen. Marvin was so skinny, at least I thought when he came in, but he's
long and skinny.
Mm-hmm. Now he's huge. And I guess like if you can add on that kind of muscle, be bulky and still remain twitchy, or that's kind of where you enter that kind of freak area. And at Ohio State, that's what you want from your receivers. You want them to be freaks. You want them to, look huge. I didn't see a tweet yesterday, Zach. I don't know if it was your tweet or someone else's, but it was talking about how Urban Meyer used to call the running back position the Cadillac position at Ohio State. It's now why you look mad when I said that. You hate that.
I don't hate it. It's just like, shut up. I was like, the Cadillac position. Okay. What's the quarterback position? Mercedes position. The receiver position is what? The Lamborghini position. Like, it's just stupid.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is it like, is it kind of shifting, or are they just all Cadillac positions to be in on the offensive?
I mean, to be the starting running back at Ohio State's a big fucking deal. We don't need to call it something stupid and like douchey, like the Cadillac position. Like, it's just so lame, and the players saw right through it and thought it was stupid. Half the shit Urban did was just like, you're like, what? Like, no one thinks that's cool. I don't know why you say that. But anyways, as you say, I digress. Yes, it's a big fucking deal to be the starting running back at Ohio State, to be the starting X at Ohio State. It is a big deal. Huge deal. So whatever you want to call it, whatever douchebag name you want to give it, the Cadillac position, sure. Yep, it is. It is still that. Like, to be Travion Henderson right now, man, I think anyone in the world would want to trade places with him and be as talented as he is and be the starting running back at Ohio State. Absolutely. It's a huge deal. Huge.
Right. I mean, it just feels like being a starting receiver at Ohio State from here on out feels like you're going to be obviously a lock NFLer. And it was kind of like that before, but it feels like it's just getting like that way. I expect
it's been enhanced. Brian Hartline's enhanced that position. I mean, you always were going to make it to the NFL. Now you're talking about high draft pick, right? Like when I was coaching that position, you were always going to probably get drafted, maybe late round depending on how good you are, but you're always going to make a roster and play in the NFL. You might not last long. You might not have a long career. That was kind of where I got the position, and Brian Hartline just completely pushed it over the top. I mean, now if you start at receiver at Ohio State, you're probably a top 3-round draft pick, and that's just crazy.
That's what it's feeling like. I think this room probably has at least 3 more first rounders in it, and we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to predict that. That's why I do it. Yeah, every player that comes in that's a highly rated recruit, you think is going to be a first rounder, and then they're just not. Yeah. Right? It just happens that they're good, they're really good, but they're just not first rounders. Right? Austin Mack's first practice at Ohio State, everyone in the facility was like, that kid is a 3-and-done, no doubt first rounder. I mean, that's what everyone said at first practice, right? And then it ended up being, I mean, he was a great, really good player. He's still in the NFL, so it's not like it was a failure, but he wasn't that because that's just hype. That was just hype.
That's part of recruiting, and I do want to come to recruiting, but go ahead.
Going back to it, like the Cadillac position and why I think that's so dumb is like, what is the corner position at Ohio State then? Like every kid that started at corner is the first rounder. So like, is that, what is that car? Like it's to start at Ohio State, to start at Alabama. That is absurdly a big deal. It is insanely a big deal.
Almost in any position, to be honest.
Any position, tackle. To be the starting right tackle or left tackle at Ohio State, that's a massive deal. Huge deal. Like, you're probably going to make a lot of money playing football. Yeah. And it may not be for 10 years. It may be for two or three, but you're going to make a shitload of money playing football because you're the starting left tackle at Ohio State. It's just, it is what it is. It's a big deal.
Being named a starter at Ohio State or Alabama changes your life. Just straight up.
Your life. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, all right. I do want to move, you know, there was some talk about the linebacker room and the tight end room. We talked about kind of yesterday. Cade Stover still with the linebackers, kind of as expected by you and me this spring. Even though tight end is our thinnest room.
Yeah, it's they know something. All that tells you is they know something we don't know, right? Because okay. I've looked at the roster. I've even talked, you know, I think I've made it clear and I'll make it clear again on the show. I don't ever leverage my relationships with people at Ohio State for information. That's not my role. I don't give a shit if I have any information to give out on the show other than my own insight and knowledge. That's kind of the platform, that's the brand. I'm never going to call Justin Fry and be like, hey, who's the starting tight end? Like, yeah. Not going to do it. Like, that's a friend of mine. I'm not going to leverage that. Never going to happen. I might hear things or they might tell me something that, you know, that they kind of bring out. I don't
have. You're not big J journalism. You're just interested. No. Like, it's like,
no, like I just talk to friends of mine. Mm-hmm, and if they tell me something that's newsworthy, I may talk about it on the show just because it comes up. But anyways, they must know something that we don't know about the tight end position because it's an awfully critical position for this offense, the way they do everything, the run game, pass protection, not so much in the pass game, but maybe that'll change one day. To not have Cade Stover there, who I think had a chance to be a great tight end, to keep him on defense, they must know something. Someone must be flashing and showing promise in that room. I don't know who it is. I've looked at the roster. I've watched highlight tapes. I don't see a guy that's like a real guy at tight end. So major concern for me, but that's why I'm sitting here in front of a camera and those coaches are in meeting rooms watching film and putting together game plans because they know. They witness all this stuff firsthand. So Cade Stover staying on defense tells me they think they got at least one guy in that tight end room that's going to be good.
Or could it mean that he's shown enough on defense to where maybe they're like, wait, like this, he could end up being a good linebacker for us? Because I thought he was in line to start this year on the tight end side if he would have stayed there.
Yeah. I mean, it's both, right? Mm-hmm. You can't rob Peter to pay Paul, right?
Yeah.
If he might, and granted they need linebacker play. They've needed linebacker play for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So if he did flash at linebacker, it might be a kind of, where is he provide the most impact on the team? And that is linebacker. And I see your darling angel said G Scott Jr. I agree. G Scott Jr. I think has a chance to be such a weapon from an H-back role. But he's just not a true on the line tight end. He's not a guy that is going to line up and block insert stretch like they run, right? He's not going to line up and block whatever you want to call it, I guess, outside zone. What's the layman's term? Like where they run the sweep play to the right and he's got to block a defensive end to the right for 7 yards. Like it's just never going to happen. I don't believe he's not tall enough and long enough. And he's not going to weigh 260 pounds ever, 250. He'll be a 230 pound kind of H-back dynamic athlete. And that's not taking away anything from what he could be and the impact he could provide. It's just, I'm looking at, all right, who's going to run pass pro? They run 7-man pass pro. Mm-hmm. Like that tight end has to pass block. G Scott ain't pass blocking. Yeah. And he could pass block linebackers and stuff like that, but he's not blocking Chase Young. Like it's just never going to happen.
And I do see that other comment about people, they've been talking up Joe Royer also. He was slight of frame. I'd be interested to see where he's at now. But my initial is maybe it is G Scott. I'm not entirely sure, but, Joe is 6'5", 245 is what he's listed at. Joe
Rose. Yeah. They have four or five guys that are, you know, fit the bill size wise. Mm-hmm. I just don't know. I guess we'll find out.
They know something. And then this kind of takes me to my next point. For this, Ohio State is chasing teams like Alabama and Georgia. I mean, that's simply it. To be one of like the true elites, you just have to get there. And this Ohio State defense, they could potentially start three guys to switch position in the linebacker room. And that's wild. Not okay. Yeah, that's not okay if you're Ohio State chasing Georgia and Bama because
it makes you wonder what the fuck did we do for the last 3-4 years recruiting the linebacker position?
Mm-hmm.
It's just bizarre. Like when that happens, right? It's like, what? Wait a minute. Were we recruiting linebackers? Why are we having to move guys into your room to fill the void? That who was? Did Al Washington recruit anyone?
And it's like, we heard for so long how great of a recruiter Al Washington was about this, about that, for landing some Ohio kids.
Yeah, but see, sometimes that's what happens when you just listen to fans and listen to 11 Warriors. It's like, he's a dynamic recruiter. It's like, what the fuck? Why? Who did he recruit? And you really got to dive into stories to know why. People say about Kerry Combs all the time, great recruiter. I'm like, why? Who did he recruit? Denzel Ward? Denzel Ward like had Buckeye underwear on every day. Michael Jordan? Michael Jordan came to camp and said he loved Ohio State. Kerry Combs had never heard of him. Like you got to understand why. Why is Kerry a great recruiter? Why is Al Washington a great recruiter? Who did he recruit? Show me one time. Like, I've been around some great recruiters. Like Everett Withers, mm-hmm. great recruiter. Went down and got Raekwon McMillan. Went down and got Von Bell. Like, excellent recruiter. And I've been around a bunch of them. Why is Al Washington a great recruiter? Who did he recruit?
I don't know.
At Boston College, he was just pulling in fucking dudes. Cincinnati, pulling in dudes. Michigan. Yeah, he really recruited some fucking studs at Michigan. No, the answer is no. He's never been a great recruiter unless you show me on paper. Who did he get?
I mean, honestly, since 2019, if you kind of look at the guys we brought in, we've only
Tommy
brought
Eichenberg.
In.
That's a fucking
He's outside the top 100. I really was looking at the top 100 guys that were linebackers, and all we got was Cody Simon. He didn't get Mitchell. I believe that was the last regime. And then
I signed Taraja Mitchell.
Yeah, you're right. You're okay. Whoa there. That's right. We've talked about that before. I'm tripping. But those are the only two guys that were really blue chip guys that we got. I know people are going to reference Court Williams. He was outside the top 100 as a linebacker. Cade Stover was outside the top 100 as a linebacker. Reed Carrico was inside the top 100, but obviously, he hasn't seen the field yet to this point. And then if you look at teams like Alabama and Georgia, I mean, in that same window, when we have three guys that are top 100 guys, they're laying in a shorter window. They have 4 and 5, and they have guys that are playing. And yet our guys, our starting linebackers, are guys that are outside the top 100 or guys that we have to switch positions with. And right. That's why the linebacker placement is so bad. And it's like,
basically Taraja and Cody Simon are the two highest rated recruits in that room, right?
Since 2019. Correct. Yep.
And I recruited Taraja Mitchell. Cody mm-hmm. Simon, I believe, is a Jersey kid, right? Mm-hmm. That means Jeff Hafley recruited him. So who did Al recruit?
Reed, and that was an Ohio kid.
Ohio kid from Ironton?
Yeah.
Fuck. My daughter can get him to come to Ohio State.
CJ Hicks and Sonny Styles, those are both Ohio kids. So
yeah, I mean, Gabe Powers, Marysville kid, that was mm-hmm. fucking, man, that was a tough get. And I agree. Those are the names you just threw out. I think have a chance to be great players, but that does not make someone a great recruiter.
Right.
Like, signing all three of the linebackers in Marysville is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Jersey, go to South Florida, go to Texas, go to Georgia, go sign you a big time fucking guy. Bring him to Ohio State. The guy that doesn't belong, shouldn't have went to Ohio State. Like, how the fuck did they get that kid, right? Like CJ Stroud from LA. Mm-hmm. Go get Von Bell from, you know, Southern Tennessee, Northern Georgia, whatever you want to call it. Go get big time guys. Go get Marvin Harrison Jr. Go get G Scott. Go get name a guy, Chris Olave from San Diego. Yeah. Like, go get a big time guy from a fucking halfway across the globe and get him to become a Buckeye. And he's a first rounder. Go do that. And then you're a great recruiter. Just because you signed a kid from fucking Ironton doesn't make you a great recruiter. Mm-hmm. This pisses me off when people say that. It's like, what do you mean he's a great recruiter? No, he's not. And maybe he could be, but he's never been. So I'll wait until he does it to call him a guy a great recruiter.
If you take away the Ohio kid, Zach, since 2019, Ohio State's only landed two top 100 linebackers. One of them was by you.
Yes.
That's concerning.
Very concerning. I'm not there anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying. Like, so now we're at a place where at Ohio State, if you want to catch Alabama and Georgia, you can't and really shouldn't have three guys in that linebacker room that are probably going to be starters or have chances to be starters.
You end up with Smurf Borland starting a middle linebacker, and it's like, what are we doing? This is Ohio. We're trying to – do you see that Georgia defense play this past year? And like, that's what we want to look like.
Exactly.
We don't want to have fucking these stiffs trying to cover Devontae Smith. It's just so frustrating. It all comes down to recruiting. So I guess my point is don't call people big-time recruiters unless you actually look at, like, all right, are they?
Mm-hmm.
And I love Kerry Combs. I think he's a good recruiter. I'm not knocking him. But people say that about Kerry, and it blows my fucking mind. Like, who did he sign? Marshawn Lattimore, Glenville, Ted Ginn Sr. Real fucking tough one. Real tough get there.
I'll bite back. Okuda?
Okuda. Greg Schiano signed Okuda.
You're right. Sean Wade.
Go ahead. I'll wait.
Sean Wade. I'm just firing
Sean
him.
So that was a decent get. Was a decent get. Tim Hinton had a lot to do with it, but Kerry was involved there. So there's one guy he recruited. That was a tough get, right? Sean Wade definitely was a big one, a big time guy.
Bradley Roby was he even highly regarded?
Bradley Roby was on roster when Kerry walked in the door.
Got it. Okay. Well, hey, look, I'm just pushing back because
think about the guys the best corners, right? Marshawn Lattimore, Glenville, Denzel Ward, Garyon Conley, all Ohio kids.
Nordonia Maslin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, I used to tell Urban all the time, he's like, why can't we recruit like Kerry? I'm like, I don't know. Have fucking a bunch of first round receivers being born in Ohio. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm trying, but I have to go to fucking South Florida and crazy ass places to get these kids. The corner position, they just like shit them out in Ohio, and here we are.
Yeah, no, you're right. And like having two, oh yeah, Eli Apple, he was a five-star. Let's go, Eli Apple reference on the show today. So
Eli Apple actually, if you go back to that, he was actually recruited by, oh God, what's his name now? The corners coach that everyone hated.
Tavares Johnson or
no.
Or Alex Grinch?
No. God damn it, why can't you think of his name? It doesn't matter. He was recruited by the corners coach that was here before Kerry. That was only here for a minute. Then he went to Arkansas with Paul Haynes. And then he came back and replaced Kerry. And everyone fucking hated him. The corner sucked. And they fired him.
Totally.
Why can't I remember his name? I know him. Anyway, as soon as
we end the show,
probably better that I don't say his name.
Yeah, let's. That's fine with that. It just blows my mind the difference in linebacker rooms. Kind of as we continue, I do want to ask you about Cade Stover again. It seems like Cade Stover, that Ryan Day has not closed the door on him coming back to offense, but he said it's the kid's choice. Is that a real thing? Or do coaches kind of, you know, push that, like, hey, like maybe if you switch sides, we would help you. But he said it's up to Cade whether he wants to play on the offensive side or defensive side of the ball.
I mean, I guess if you don't care, it's up to the kid. And a lot of times coaches say that, but they kind of drive the kid where they want him and make it his decision. You know what I mean? Like that manipulation, like, you know, like you make going somewhere your wife's decision, but really it was yours. You just kind of directed her, and it's like, well, good idea, honey. Yeah, let's go to the strip club. Like, what? Hey, it was your idea, not mine. I don't know. Taver Johnson. There you go. Taver Johnson. Thank you.
Oh yeah, I pronounced it wrong. I thought I had it, but you know, it is what it is. I'm really blown away. I did want to ask because we got a crystal ball, and it seems like Tackett is a not Tackett. I'm tripping. That's who mentioned it. There's a Louisiana kid that got crystal ball to Ohio State. And there was a question about recruiting in Louisiana because those Louisiana kids never seem to leave. Have you ever had success in Louisiana, or how difficult is going to Louisiana to recruit kids?
I've tried. I think I mentioned it on a show a couple weeks ago. I've tried a couple times, like twice. And then after that, I just stopped trying because they don't leave. They don't leave. And if they do leave, it's because LSU deems they're not good enough to play at LSU. And then why do you want them if you're Ohio State? Because you don't get a kid from Louisiana.
Well, it makes Louisiana different than like Georgia.
They're fucked up, man. You ever been there? They're fucked up
there,
people.
I've been there one time,
and it's some backwoods shit now. Like Creole as hell. Like Jimbo's daddy's gonna fire your daddy if you don't go to play for them Tigers, and like just fucking crazy. It's a wild, wild world, and I'll never forget. And this, granted, this was Alabama, not Louisiana, but Alabama's probably a lesser version of Louisiana, essentially. Mm-hmm. And we were at Florida, and we got a five-star. The number one tackle in the country was out of the state of Alabama, committed or silently, like told Florida that he was coming to Florida, right? Done deal, told Steve Adazio, told Urban Meyer, I'm coming to Florida. And this is probably the weekend before signing day, probably like 4 or 5 days out. On signing day, the kid called Steve Adazio and Urban and is bawling, crying, bawling. And he said, Coach, I don't know what to do. I'm so sorry. I'm not allowed to come. And they were like, what do you mean you're not allowed to come? And he was like, I have to go to Alabama. I'm sorry. And hung up. And he signed with Alabama. And they're like, what the hell? And they're talking to the high school coach. And the high school coach said, hey, Coach, I need you to stop calling me. He said, we found out that if he did go to Florida, that I was going to be fired from my head coaching position and his dad was going to lose his job at the car dealership. Whoa. And so he had to go to Alabama. That's the type of shit those backwoods ass states do. You want to talk about crazy? Go talk to KJ Hill's family in the state of Arkansas. That fucked up state. I mean, it's like
they tried to cancel his visit, didn't they?
Well, they did all kinds of stuff. But yeah, Bert, big fat Bert called Chris Ash and said he was canceling KJ Hill's official visit. And it's like, what? You're the head coach of Arkansas. You can't cancel a recruit's visit. But then they did all kinds of stuff. This is stories of trying to cancel his KJ Hill's stepdad had just gotten a new job, and the boss sat him down right after he got it and said, hey, listen, I just want to make sure something's clear. Like, I hired you because I think you're going to be great for this job, and the job is still yours, but I'm getting unbelievable pressure to take this job away from you because KJ's not going to Arkansas. And it's like, you're fucking with people's livelihood, like jobs. And so that you go back to Louisiana, like, there ain't no high school coach. There's no way a high school coach in Louisiana is not sending a kid to LSU. He will be out of a job. He will lose his job. Not only that, the daddy will probably lose his job. The mommy will lose her job. Like, it's a bad deal. So that kid's going to LSU. Forget about it. Like, good luck.
Man, he's got those Ohio State crystal balls, man. And he was just on campus. That's something else. That's absolutely ridiculous. I do want to ask you, Zach, if you had, you know, fresh in your mind, what was your favorite position battle to watch that was really good kind of in spring?
My favorite position battle?
Yeah.
Like players or just in general?
Like players fighting for a starting job through the spring, like when it was really close and you kind of saw the true meaning of like iron sharpening iron.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm going to look at my position first, and it was always interesting because I played six, right? So it wasn't as competitive to become one of the six. Like if you were in the top half of the group, you're in the six, right? But then it became what I always enjoyed watching was the competitive nature of making plays, right? Like if a guy was, let's say, the fourth best receiver, third best receiver, whatever, he knew he was going to play. He knew he was in the rotation. But then it became like a pride thing. Like us six are playing. It's our group. And like, I got to make a play so that my other five dudes like think I'm worthy. Right.
It's like stepping up.
Yeah. And it became like a chase to make plays. We go into 7-on-7 every Wednesday. We go in the red zone, and it was like, who's going to score first? And then who's going to score the most, right? Who's going to make somebody look stupid? Like that competition, inner competition, right? The internal position group competitions are great. They're awesome. But even more than that, it was always the battles with BIA, right? Mm-hmm. The one-on-ones, the 7-on-7s, the team drills where, you know, not only are you watching your players battle to become like the wide receiver one, wide receiver two, whatever, but you're watching them battle against a first rounder every fucking rep. And it's like, this is so much fun to witness. And what a tool, what an asset for Michael Thomas to go against Marshawn Lattimore, Gerrion Conley, Eli Apple, to go against all those guys. Like, what an asset for him in development. Like, he's never going to face the three corners like that in a game ever. And so spring was my favorite. And you got to see so much development and so much competition, because the reality is after about the 9th, 10th practice of training camp, like, you're not going against those corners anymore. I mean, in one-on-ones you will, but like in 7-on-7, but you get to team drills, you're going against the second team because you're trying to get ready for a season, right? A game. So you don't go against Bradley Roby anymore. You're going against, you know, that next guy. Mm-hmm. And it's still good. The kid's still a good player, but that battle of ones-on-ones, good on good, every single rep, that happens in spring and spring only. So it's a fun time. And it's honestly, by about now, the first couple practices are bullshit. No pads, you know, everyone's fresh. But you get to about practice 9 of spring ball, practice 10, it's fucking lit. I mean, lit. Like, energy through the roof, competition through the roof. Everybody knows the offense. Everybody knows the defense. No more MAs, mental errors. Everyone is just going, just competing, and it's awesome.
How often did a wide receiver try to welcome like a freshman corner to spring football? Did they like make a point to go after kids? This is what I want to hear, man. I want to hear like the Kobe Bryant stories of freaking Mike Thomas just like having a day where no one can stop
him. So my guys had a thing, and I don't even know where this came from. I don't even know the origination of it, but they would pick on freshmen. They would. And it's kind of like an indoctrination, right?
Yeah. Welcome to the league almost.
Yeah. Not off the field. Off the field, they were friends, you know, no hazing or anything like that. But on the field, there was a complete baptism by fire, and they would call him a SETI. And I'm like, well, I don't know what a SETI is. I looked it up, even on Urban Dictionary. You know, I'm like the old white guy, apparently. I don't know what that is. And it didn't really tell me anything. So I asked them one time, what is a SETI? They're like, come on, coach, you were in college, right? I'm like, yeah. They're like, you know, that girl just gets passed around a party. Like, one dude takes her in the bathroom. Next dude takes her in the bedroom. Like, just gets passed around a party. I'm like, oh, God. They're like, Eli Zassetti. I don't know what to tell you. Like, he's getting passed around our group. Like, who wants a turn? Who wants a turn to just make Eli look stupid, right? And so they would pick on these young kids, and they would call him Zassetti. Like, and they would beat him in a one-on-one, throw the ball at him, and be like, who's next? Who wants next on his pitch? Like, just go off. So, yeah, they're ruthless now. They're ruthless. But they're friends afterwards, mm-hmm. right? In the locker room, they're friends. But on the field, boy, you talk about savage mode. Savages.
Ooh, I would have loved to just kind of peel back and watch some of those practices. I mean, like, I just, you know, when me and you have talked kind of off air about, like, Noah Brown's year before he broke his leg, like, you talked about just him absolutely shredding no matter what, just dominating every single practice through and through. Unreal stuff, doing unreal things to the point where he felt like, you know, everyone felt like he was the best player on offense. It's insane. It makes me excited. I can't believe I have to wait so long for football to start. But Zach, I don't have anything else for today. I just wanted to kind of talk about spring football a little bit. Interviews are coming later today, so we'll be able to learn a little bit more about the players. I'll probably overanalyze that, and Zach will tell me why I'm wrong.
It's always fun telling you why you're wrong.
Yeah, as usual.
I did it. Well, Chris, we forgot a hometown hero. We'll have to do that tomorrow. We'll do it Friday.
Yeah, we're getting
that's
back
a good
into
Friday
it.
Thing. Mm-hmm. We'll move it to Friday. We'll do hometown heroes every Friday because I always forget, and then I remember Thursday, and then we do it Friday. Yeah. we'll do that. But also, just go hit us up about March Madness. Mm-hmm. Info will be everywhere on social media. I put out the graphic. If you want to see the payouts for the squares, $100 a square or $20 a bracket, you can do as many brackets as you want, raise as much money as we can, and get the pot as big as we can. Venmo's Cameron Media, no space, no underscore, Cameron, CameronMedia. Cameron Media. Come hang out, man. Play March Madness. Starts next Thursday. Let's get it. That's all I got, Chris. Menace out.